Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like the sands through Carpenter's Creek, so are the days of our Pensacola. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
What are we doing here? Why are we concerned about an issue from where, what I understand, the city lost virtually no money on? An event that actually injected money into our economy. We are not seeing droves of churches being required to go on field trips to this show. So why are we concerned about an issue where the people are not only voluntarily going, but paying to go?
Yeah, that's actually what you should push for, is push for mandatory attendance at the Drag Queen Christmas. And, you know, it is an option. It is an elective choice. This continues to be an issue at the Pensacola City Council meetings, where you had, once again, both pro and con. You had supporters of the Drag Queen Christmas show that's going to come to the Sanger 2 days before Christmas. It's going to perform at other places, you know, many days before Christmas. It just happens to be that it's going to be here 2 days before. It's a touring show. And this is a person named Honor Mosey Bell III, and talking about, you know, how, why are we even fighting about this so much? A lot of church, you know, the same kind of cast of opponents also showed up in more numbers than the supporters.
It seems clear that there is a lot of fear that has been whipped up around this show, but I promise you, drag is not new and not a threat to our community. LGBTQ people are not new and are not a threat to our community. I am not a threat to our community. This Christmas drag show is not a threat to our community. It is a cultural event that people can choose to go to or ignore. Women can wear pants, men can wear dresses, human beings can wear fabric. There are real crises that deserve the attention that have been swept aside in favor of this cultural warfare against LGBTQ people and our cultural expressions.
Yeah, and, you know, the point that Honor was making is that, you know, there are more significant issues that we should be focused on instead of this. And I'll say, I don't think this is the biggest, most important issue, but it is one that has drawn a lot of attention. A lot of people care about it. And sometimes it's the culture friction points that, even though in the grand scheme of significance may not be all that important, they're the ones that people understand. They're the ones that they have strong reactions to. And sometimes it's the little things that make the fights meaningful. And, you know, look, again, the public forum at the city council is exactly the place where you're supposed to hash this stuff out.
Now we face a possible national crisis as millions will be losing their health care, pushed further into poverty. And what are we doing in this city? We are too busy pointing fingers in useless culture wars than actually helping our fellow man. Instead of being divided, we need to unite against conditions that actually cause deaths and suffering today. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. Jesus was not an oppressor, so why should we be? Love, service, and acceptance is God's work. Hatred was not. Will you make it yours?
Right, thank
One
you.
Of the things that the pro drag show speakers have taken to doing, and particularly at this meeting, is referencing Bible verses. You know, bringing up themes of the Bible that go against what the other side is offering here with the, you know, self-described Christians and pastors, and many of them are, okay. I'm not saying they're not, but, you know, they're claiming to represent the faith, and the pro drag queen drag show people are, you know, saying, hey, there's a little bit more breadth in this faith that might include things, including, shouldn't you care about, like, the SNAP benefits being cut off, which is 3 million people in Florida, by the way. It's a half a billion dollars November 1st that won't come here, which is very significant to those families. It's also pretty significant to, for example, the low-income grocery stores at which that money gets spent. You know, that's a pretty significant hit. It's about 15% of the population is on SNAP. I was surprised by how big that number is, but that's about right. Both in Alabama, 750,000 people, and in Florida, about 3 million people. And then, you know, you've got James C. Johnson, who is one of the key organizers of this. And, you know, I've met James, and I know where his heart's at on this. And, you know, he continues to lean into describing the show in what are accurate terms, but terms that I feel uncomfortable saying on the air. So you'll hear some bleeps when I play his audio here in just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Brought to you by White Sands Electric, reminding you that fall is the best time to check your breakers or add surge protection. Safety first. That's whitesandselectric.com. Still rolling accident-free right now and also delay-free. I-10, I-110 are all looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. So Pastor Johnson, of course, one of the people who speaks at this every time, and he had fairly vivid things to say.
Of course, obscenity is not protected by the First Amendment.
That's correct.
Any attempt to justify Drag Queen Christmas with the First Amendment reveal either one's ignorance about the limits to the First Amendment, or it reveals ignorance about Drag Queen Christmas in specific.
Well, I would say this is a disputed matter, okay? He's right in that if it is obscene, then it is not protected by the First Amendment. And, of course, Sanger has actually said if the show crosses the line legally into obscenity, we will stop the show and arrest people. Just to be clear. So he's right. And what he's claiming is that based on evidence he's seen of past similar shows, you can expect this show to contain things that would cross the line into obscenity. Of course, we don't know until the shows actually start performing. And that particular tour hasn't even started yet. So there's a bit of an uncertainty about the actual content. If it is as he says, then he's right. And if it is not as he says, then he's wrong. And that's a key fact matter that just doesn't exist yet because you have to see the show to know.
Had the city actually reviewed it, you would know that at a point during the production, one of the drag queens walks over to stage left to open a gift on Christmas and then reveals an 18-inch The drag queen then kisses the Then he places it in his crotch area and he prances around the stage, gyrating and thrusting like a fool.
Yeah, so simulated sexual activity that arouses the prurient interest and does not have artistic value. Those are the three elements of the Miller test that would qualify as obscenity if it fails all three of those tests. Has to fail all three, by the way. And he knows this. Pastor Johnson knows this.
Another point during the production, drag queens imitate performing on one another. You might say, coming soon to Pensacola Sanger Theater, obscenity. It's obscenity because Drag Queen Christmas fails the three-pronged Miller test. It appeals to the prurient interest, then it depicts sexual conduct, and Drag Queen Christmas seriously lacks literary, artistic, political, or scientific value.
Yeah, and again, on that last one, lacking serious political or other value, artistic value, again, that's going to depend on the particular show. It's hard to know that in advance until you see the actual show that's being performed, which is another element of whether it justifies an arrest. Prior restraint or getting, you know, ending a contract before you've seen the actual performance, you know, is a dicey move precisely because of that. But again, the Sanger has promised that if it winds up crossing that line, they will stop the show and they will arrest people. But Pastor Johnson goes on. I know what he wants to do. He feels like the city council is not paying attention to the actual facts that he has possession of. He feels like we're pretending that this is just some ordinary, blasé drag show that doesn't matter. And to his credit, he's not emphasizing the issue about blasphemy or proximity to Christmas, which are irrelevant because the more you make it about religion, the more protected it becomes. And, you know, he's properly focusing in on the indecency and obscenity question. But, you know, I know he wants to explain to people what's in it. I feel like it's a little bit abundant with the content, which is why I am, you know, censoring some of it for the air. I know Pastor Johnson thinks it's hilariously ironic that in defending free speech, I'm censoring the things he's saying, even though what he's saying are technically accurate terminology that he, as a pastor and a Christian, wishes he didn't have to say, but thinks he has to say to tell the city council what's actually happening. So, you know, there's all kinds of funny bits about this.
Further, had the city actually reviewed Drag Queen Christmas, you would know that Murray and Peter have been involved in at least three significant legal controversies. One with the Florida Department of Business in Fort Lauderdale, another with the Hyatt Regency in Miami, and most notably, the one in Orlando, Florida. All three were about children being present for those obscene shows. And I know that the Sanger has made this an 18 and over show. However, Murray and Peter's past actions give you an idea of who they really are. They're fine with performers playing with in front of children. They're fine with a man pulling back his Christmas red G-string and off to a crowd in front of children.
Yeah, and I mean, all of those things are, again, his fact claims about the past performance of the show, and time will tell whether it's for the future or not. I'm still where I was, which is, I trust the judgment of the city attorney, who has specifically, you know, reaffirmed that this would pose significant risk for the city if, in fact, they canceled the show. In fact, Tenney Day brought and asked him, Adam Cobb is his name, asked him about this during the meeting afterwards.
I want to thank everyone for having their voices heard, but I wanted to direct my question to the city attorney. Can you please remind the public or this council, just direct us on what authority we do have regarding this issue?
Very simply, as I stated, I think two meetings ago, we face significant contractual and constitutional liability if we take any action to stop this show, to be frank.
Yeah, if we do anything, we're going to get sued for violating the contract and also for violating the 14th and First Amendments.
So ultimately, this is just public forum, getting your voice heard. There's nothing we can do, I'm asking.
There's nothing that I would recommend doing.
Yeah, you can't shout out. We're going to follow the rules. We're going to follow the rules.
Yeah, one of the protesters in the audience shouts out, there is something you can do. But again, to me, this is a I think they have behaved very well generally, but there have been occasional times where they just let their emotions get the better of them. They're so worked up about this that they start shouting out from the crowd when they don't hear what they want to hear. And, you know, that's not the rules of the forum either. Not to his credit, I think that, you know, Jared's been pretty patient, which is he is. That's his nature. He's pretty, you know, flexible and, you know, laid back. So we'll see. There's more on this, and I don't have a lot of comments on these particular ones. I just wanted to give you the context that this continues to be a discussion and broad issues about the First Amendment, about public spaces, about indecency, about tolerance, about inclusivity, because, you know, a lot of this is not about my read, okay, is that a lot of this is not only about the idea of it being an at Christmas drag show. It is the undercurrent of hostility to, you know, LGBTQ people, their lifestyle, being viewed as immoral, biblically immoral, however you want to say that, a violation of conservative, you know, traditional sexual ethics that have largely changed in this country, both in the law and in the norms that people accept. But still, you know, I'm actually on their side on those things. I think all of that stuff is at the very least problematic, if not, you know, genuinely immoral. Of course, I think for Christians, a lot of times we're inconsistent on these topics. I've said this before, but it's worth, you know, sort of mentioning again. Sometimes we pitch a real big fit about, you know, gay behavior or about trans issues, which are not the same topics, but they do get lumped together under the holy acronym string, you know, right, which I talk about on Fridays. But we don't say enough about how, you know, the Bible is also very anti-divorce. And the Bible is also very anti-premarital sex. And, you know, lust, for example. And so we don't, like, we kind of single out this one subcategory of sex ethics for real high-intensity objection. And so, you know, if gay people come to our church, you know, that becomes a problem. But if divorced people come to our church, we don't even notice. You don't even ask. Don't even care. You know, second marriage, third marriage, whatever. And that's, you'd have a hard time justifying the inconsistency there. And so when they're talking, when like Honor Mosey is talking about how, look, you're protesting this, but are you dealing with SNAP benefits? Are you dealing with the oppression of the homeless? Are you, you know, handling the ICE raids against the immigrant and the stranger? Are you being consistent about Christian values, or are you really picking the easy target that looks an awful lot like bullying the way it's coming off? And it does look like bullying the way it's coming off. You know, I think that's a fair question to ask that we should all check with ourselves and make sure that we're being, you know, fair across the board and consistent to the whole scope of biblical values and not just the one that or two that are the most easy to get worked up about and that we can feel the most self-righteous about. So that's a good question to be asking. And I think the supporters of the Drag Queen Christmas, though I think it is likely verging on obscene and probably blasphemous and not something I would want to watch, I do still think that it is protected speech and, you know, it shows our commitment to the First Amendment that we allow stuff like that. But, you know, we've had this conversation before and we will continue to have it again because it is being had. Many hours of public time at the city council is being spent on this. 625 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. Just one accident to let you know about on Navarre Parkway and Rosewood Drive. That's seeing some minor delays there, but it's a three-car accident. Again, that's 98 eastbound at Rosewood Drive. It's going to be start causing some delays just in the near future. But for right now, it's all in the left lane, so get in the right-hand lane. Other than that, we look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5. The History of the Blues is presented by Lambert Transfer and Storage.
There have been many changes of command in the U.S. Navy in many different places. But the 1954 change of command that marked Lieutenant Commander Hawkins turning over command of the Blue Angels to Lieutenant Commander Zeke Cormier in February of 1954 was something special. In the skies over NAS New Orleans, at an altitude of 800 feet and a speed of 600 miles per hour, Lieutenant Commander Hawkins led his men in diamond formation, with Lieutenant Commander Cormier slightly behind and below. On signal, Cormier, the new leader, pulled up from the rear and into a loop. The diamond then started their loop and at 1,200 feet broke formation, with each member doing a roll and continuing the loop. At the top of the loop, at about 6,000 feet, Hawkins rolled out and flew away. The three wingmen continued their loops, joined Cormier at the bottom in the diamond formation, and passed over the flight line with their new leader. Hawkins came back alone at 800 feet for one final pass over the crowd as a Blue Angel, and the aerial change of command was complete. During the 10th anniversary year of 1956, the Blue Angels made their first appearance on foreign soil, or is that foreign airspace, in Toronto, Canada. This show was in addition to 44 other shows across the United States. By year's end, millions had seen the flight exhibition team in person on television programs such as Navy Log and Mickey Mouse Club Newsreel, or the Cinerama production Cinerama Holiday. It was clear that the Blue Angels had fulfilled their mission to bring the Navy to the people. In the middle of the 1957-58 season, the Blue Angels transitioned from the F9-F8 Cougar to the supersonic afterburner-equipped F11A Tiger. Such a mid-season transition was a difficult process, considering that, for a period of about 3 months, it was necessary for the pilots to devote all available time between air shows to familiarize themselves with their new jets while flying their old Cougars for each public performance. This required tremendous concentration because there was considerable difference in control pressures and sensitivity, trim changes, and power requirements between the two aircraft. But the transition was successful, and the Blue Angels completed their season in the new Tigers with the unanimous opinion that they looked better than ever. I'll be back with more after this.
Need to move across town, across the country, or even across the globe? Trust Lambert Moving Systems. Veteran-owned, military-approved, and now celebrating over 100 years of moving excellence. As a quality award winner, BVB-accredited, and agent for North American Van Lines, they handle local, long-distance, industrial, and international moves, with packing, storage, and warehousing available. Serving Pensacola to Mobile and all the surrounding areas and supporting the Gary Sins Foundation. Choose a team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com today.
The Blue Angels would fly the F-11A Tigers for the next decade. That and more next time on News Radio's History of the Blue Angels.
Each Sunday at 7:30 a.m., the Bible Baptist Bookstore of Pensacola, Florida, brings you Theological Seminar with teacher Peter S. Ruckman, founder and president of the Pensacola Bible Institute. He will teach you what the Bible says about the subject, not merely what it is presumed to teach.
Tune in this Sunday at 7:30 a.m. for Theological Seminar with Dr. Peter S. Ruckman. Brought to you by Bible Baptist Bookstore on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
Ben Shockley, don't you die on me!
And I remember watching The Gauntlet as a kid, and you know, I watched a lot of things as a kid I probably shouldn't have watched. But
yeah, I'm starting to figure that out.
Yeah,
Andrew.
A lot of things. Very liberal parents, for sure. liberal Christian parents, by the way. Nag, nag, nag. Classic Clint Eastwood. All right, David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David.
Now, President Trump continues his trip through Asia today. He's in South Korea meeting with President Lee Jae-myung and receiving a golden crown from an ancient royal tomb. He'll also be meeting with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping tomorrow. America's apparently getting skinnier, and weight loss drugs may be a contributing factor. According to a self-reported Gallup poll, for the first time in more than 15 years, obesity rates in the U.S. have fallen from 40 to 37%. That's an estimated 7.6 million fewer obese adults. The same poll reported 15% of women and just under 10% of men are using drugs like Ozempic.
Well, you know, the drugs work, at least for now. Yeah. Do you think Trump tries on the crown?
Well,
100% chance.
Yeah. Air Force One, he's let me see.
This is the meme that he wants people to see because it'll drive him crazy.
Gianna Gelosi, a summit, a bilateral meeting, and a dinner all on the agenda for President Trump when he arrived in South Korea. But all eyes are on tomorrow's sit-down with President Xi Jinping of China.
We're going to be, I hope, making a deal. I think we're going to have a deal. I think it'll be a good deal for both. And that's really a great result. You know, that's better than fighting and going through all sorts of problems.
President Trump blames China for the flow of fentanyl and levied big tariffs against Chinese imports. China tightened export controls of rare earth minerals and halted imports of American soybeans. Hurricane Melissa making landfall in Cuba.
Winds are down to 115. This is still a Category 3 hurricane. First landfall was yesterday for Jamaica as a powerful Category 5 hurricane. Winds of 185 miles per hour.
That is Fox Weather's Britta Merwin. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 67 degrees. We've got cloudy skies here in Pensacola. We'll get to our forecast in a few minutes with Brooke Richardson. The city of Pensacola is heading to court to revive a $16 million stormwater project affecting the area near Joe Patty's Seafood. The lawsuit claims that the seafood business is blocking city workers from accessing an underground easement necessary for sewer upgrades.
We're at the point in the project a few years into this conversation where we have to make a decision or we're going to be putting our taxpayers in a pretty difficult spot.
Mayor D.C. Reeves there in 1975, the city vacated the land at Joe Patty's request, but did reserve an easement for storm sewer maintenance. The mayor says after 3 years of discussions, the city now has to take legal action. The project aims to address flooding issues in an area that houses about 5,000 city residents. A Milton man convicted of the rape and killing of his neighbor in 1998 was executed last night. 65-year-old Norman Grimm Jr. died by lethal injection Tuesday. He declined to make a final statement before the execution. Grimm was convicted of the sexual battery and first-degree murder of Cynthia Campbell. He was linked to the crime by evidence including DNA. Her body was found by a fisherman in Escambia Bay. She'd been beaten with a hammer and stabbed multiple times. Grimm waived his right to an appeal before the execution. Now, Santa Rosa County residents hoping to participate in Leadership Santa Rosa this year have a few extra days to sign up. The deadline was extended due to the ongoing federal government shutdown.
With the government shutdown, we also found that we have a lot of people, like folks at Whiting and some others, that typically go through the class, and they are in a little bit of a holding pattern right now. So because of that, we've also extended the application deadline to November 7th.
Kristen Rhodes there. She is on the leadership board for the program and says that Leadership Santa Rosa has actually also evolved this year. It was formerly run by the Santa Rosa Chamber of Commerce. It's now become its own independent organization, although it is still affiliated with partner chambers in Santa Rosa County. She says it's now more of a true Santa Rosa County-wide initiative. Well, those VO scooters that have been seen throughout downtown Pensacola for the last few years are now going away at the end of the week. Mayor D.C. Reeves says the contract with VO is up at the end of October. The city, of course, previously declined to renew that contract. They're planning to look at other forms of multimodal transportation. Well, Pensacola's new city administrator is on the job this week, David Stafford. He officially started with the city, completing his orientation Monday.
Not a lot to say today other than it's great to be here. Thank you, Mayor Reeves, for the opportunity to work for the city that I love, where I was born, where I raised a family, where I've spent most of my professional life. And so I'm honored to be able to help you in your efforts to lead this city for the next few years. And
Stafford said he's already met with a few department heads, and he's currently working to get caught up on the city's plans and projects. He said last week he attended the Bay Bluffs Park meeting, watched the city council and other meetings, and observed a tabletop exercise. Stafford formerly served as the Escambia Supervisor of Elections. It's 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. John's got our traffic on the fives.
That's right. Still dealing with the one accident over in Navarre on Navarre Parkway and Rosewood Drive. That is over in the left-hand lane. Again, that's 98 eastbound. As you approach Rosewood, get in the right-hand lane for that one. Starting to see some delays in that area. About a 10 to 12-minute delay right now. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We do have a 50% chance of those showers today, high near 68 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 51. For Thursday, partly cloudy skies, high near 65. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 45 degrees. Going into your Halloween Friday, high near 68, mostly sunny skies. And by Friday evening, temperatures dropping into the 50s, overnight temperatures in the 40s. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. And right now, 67 and cloudy skies. Our next news in 30 minutes. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Oil prices are slightly higher as investors weigh Russia's sanctions and the OPEC Plus output plans. West Texas Intermediate currently sitting at $60.36 per barrel. Brent currently sitting at $64.67 per barrel. NVIDIA appears to be on course to become the first company to surpass the $5 trillion market value. The Czech giant has evolved from a niche video game processor to an integral player in the artificial intelligence boom. CVS Health has reported third quarter earnings and revenue that blew past estimates and raised its adjusted profit outlook as the company sees improvement in its insurance unit. The quarterly results capped David Joyner's first full year as CEO of the company, which struggled to drive higher profits and improve its stock performance under Karen Lynch. Futures are slightly higher. Tuesday, the Dow Industrials gained 161, the NASDAQ up 190, the S&P 500 up 15. That's Your Money Now.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting truly great candidates for your roles? It seems impossible to find them, but they have to be out there somewhere, right? Well, they're not hard to find when you know where to go, and that place is ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day. And because these people are actively looking for jobs just like yours, it's easy to find the right person right away. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're missing out. So see what it's like when the impossible is easy. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
You take care of your car, right? So why not give your auto loan some TLC? Refinance an existing loan from another institution with PenAir Credit Union and lower your interest rate by up to 2%. Plus, you can skip payments for the first 90 days. In addition to a better rate, you'll enjoy convenient banking and a friendly local team always ready to help. Learn more at PenAir.org/auto-refi. That's PenAir.org/auto-refi. All loans are subject to approval. Offer valid on loan application submitted between October 1st and December 31st, 2025 only. Call toll-free 1-877-4-PENAIR for complete details.
Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10:30 when guests Deb Hooks and Chelsea Weaver from Pensacola State College will be on the show talking about the Fufu exhibition and the JCPenney and PSC suit up event. You will not want to miss this show tomorrow at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with guests from Pensacola State College.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight flu, pneumococcal pneumonia, RSV, and COVID-19. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and help strengthen your immune response. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. Schedule in minutes at vaxassist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Want to score tickets to see Florida State take on the Wake Forest Demon Deacons Saturday in Tallahassee?
Tap the News Radio app.
Tap the app.
Download our News Radio Pensacola app. And Monday through Fridays from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., tap the app.
Tap the app.
For your chance to win.
Each day you enter brings you one step closer to being in the stands.
The winner will be announced live at 5:15 p.m. on Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Download, then tap that app.
Tap that app.
The News Radio Pensacola app. And get ready for game day with News Radio 92.3.
We didn't play Sanford and Son. Okay, it's all right. It's all right. We'll adapt. I was like, I was just enjoying the Blitzkrieg Bop, and I realized, oh, man, we didn't play Sanford and Son. We've got on the line with us Bruce Woody, the executive director for the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority, ECUA, the folks who handle your sewer and your water and your trash, or what they call your solid waste. But Bruce Woody, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Morning, Andrew. Hey, who doesn't like the Ramones?
Yeah, they're right. I mean, you know, you can't really complain about that. It's not the one we normally use for you. All right, so first, I want to make sure and start with this because I will forget otherwise. I want to give props to your folks. We've been clearing out some, you know, tree and yard debris out of our backyard, and we had brought out like four piles and like 12 bags, and the guys came by, a truck 47G, they came by, and I did not realize there was a pile limit per week. They informed us. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. So they picked up two piles because that's the limit, and then six by six by six, and then up to 20 bags is what I'm told. You correct me if I'm wrong. And then just thinking, well, we'll just leave it out there for a week, and they'll pick it up next week. Well, they showed up again in a couple of hours, which I guess they had run the rest of their route, and they had spare time. So they came back, and they took – I mean, these guys were the best. They were super helpful, super friendly, and I just want to give them credit, you know, because – I know you probably hear complaints a lot, and I wanted to give credit where credit is due. So thank you for having good employees.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, we do have a limit, but that's to try to assure that we can make it to the end of the route and somebody at the end of the route doesn't fail to get service because we run out of room or run out of time at the end of the day.
Right.
Obviously, that crew had a little extra space at the end. They came back for you.
I love it. I mean, it was just great customer service. I've always been impressed. And, you know, like we'll be missing a can or a can gets broken and we get one within a couple of days. I mean, just, you know, very, very responsive. So I always appreciate that. Things from the board meeting yesterday. You guys were, you know, it's the new fiscal year, so you're spending money. Is that right? Which is good. I mean, that's the appropriate thing. But what are you buying?
Yeah, pretty typical for public entities, and ECUA is no different. Yesterday, we spent, probably a little over $5 million on buying equipment. Combination sewer cleaners, those pieces of equipment that you see with the big tanks on the back that we used to clean the sewer system. Bought one of those at $636,000. We bought another closed circuit television truck that we use to inspect sewer systems to identify breaks or root problems and things such as that, about $433,000. Big item really was we're continuing our replacement of our fleet. We purchased 9 Kenworth side loaders. Those are the largest the garbage trucks that you see that we use for picking up trash as well as recycling, about $417,000 a piece. So we spent about $3.7 million on that. It's worth noting that those 9 come on top of recently receiving 19 additional side loaders earlier in the year. So we replaced about a third of the fleet in the last couple of years.
Wow. So the fleet is in the like 90, is the total fleet like in the 90 vicinity, 90 trucks?
110 if you include the small and sport vehicles as
okay.
well. But yes.
Wow. Okay. And so what are they on? What's their lifespan? I mean, like, is it 20 years? Is it 10 years? Is it 5 years? Like, I have no idea.
Ideally, we try to turn those vehicles in the range of about 7 to 9 years, depending on miles
okay.
and hours on them.
Okay.
Our 2012 fleet is almost 12 years old
yeah.
because of all the delays from COVID. And in fact, part of that 19 fleet were originally ordered in 2022.
Oh, wow.
It took that long to get to get them in.
Are they do those have resale value, the old ones? I mean, I would assume anything has resale value, but you tell me, is this something you can, you know, sell off to smaller municipalities or people that might not mind taking an old one onto their fleet?
Very good question. Quite a bit of our older fleets are compressed natural gas, CNG vehicles. Those have virtually no resale value whatsoever. They're very difficult to maintain, and CNG is not available everywhere as well. So we get little more than scrap metal values for salvage value on those.
So we really got screwed on the CNG trucks. I mean, they were expensive. They didn't work well. They don't have good endurance. They're hard to maintain, and we get no money selling them at the end because people don't want them. Is that basically?
Sure. The only value was the savings and cost of fuel over the life of the vehicle.
Sure.
But that didn't quite, in our analysis, doesn't quite cover the cost of all those other items.
And that, so and by the way, that was a decision made before you came on as executive director, right? The move to CNG.
True.
Yeah. I just wanted, you know.
But in their defense, at that particular time, CNG was so cheap that that it did make some sense.
And so everything we have now is diesel, right? Everything we have now and we're buying now is all diesel?
We have a few CNG that came in and from those 19 that we bought, but everything going forward, those 9 we just purchased are diesel. Diesel's clean enough now that it's producing exhaust that's as clean as CNG, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Gas and other things that we add to it. So, yes, the first cost is lower. The operation cost for maintenance is lower. And we actually do have a resale. Yes, there is a strong salvage value of trash container vehicles.
Very good. We're talking to Bruce Woody, Executive Director at ECUA. Bruce, hang on for just a second. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
Still dealing with the accident that happened on 98 eastbound in Rosewood Drive. Traffic is now backed up almost to the Navarre Beach Bridge, so you definitely want to plan an alternate route around that one. That is very slow. I-10, I-110 are all looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Bruce Woody, the executive director at ECUA. Bruce, I know you're going to continue to tell me stuff you spent on, but I did want to ask you just a quick question. you got to authorize the spending of $5 million yesterday. Was that fun at all? Like, you know, I think of spending $5 million on cars being fun, but I just wonder, is it at all a thrill in any way?
Over the course of my career, the more exciting expenses were municipal wastewater project I did probably 15 years ago. It was $120 million.
Wow.
That was a pretty exciting one.
Okay. All right. You make sure you got it right because that's a lot of money. But I was just kind of curious because, you know, most people don't spend that kind of money on the regular basis. But you were going to tell me other stuff that you guys authorized yesterday or that you started working on yesterday.
Yeah, just some trivia. We have 96,000 sanitation customers, and that produces that means we have an inventory of about 198,000 trash cans in the system, if you can imagine that. Yesterday, we purchased an additional $500,000 worth at $52 each. That replaces about 5% of our cans per year. Which we need to do in order to keep up with new customers, container replacement due to wear and damage and such as that. So we replace about 5% of our cans a year.
Okay. Do they have a 20-year lifespan? Is that because if you're doing 5 a year and not accounting for growth and damage, but does that work out? Does that pencil out?
That's about it. We're a little lower than average. Industry-wide, it's about 7 to even as high as 10%.
Okay.
It depends on how urbanized the area is. It seems to be a lot more damage in more urban areas.
Okay.
More densely urban areas, but 5% is about our average.
I suppose that makes sense with maybe car traffic or just mishandling or whatever. Interesting. Okay. You guys are also working on some of the water well projects, right?
We are. We're also replacing service lines. As far as water wells, our Elvin McCorby well, we're in a section near just north of I Street in Cervantes. The ground storage tank is done. The well's been drilled. We have a new well head installed. We're now currently building the water treatment portion of the building. We're looking forward to bringing that project online in early summer of next year. It's making good progress. Over on our West 9 Mile project, we finished the foundations for 8 new granular activated carbon filters. Next, we'll be setting those GAC tanks and installing all the piping. That project will finish up in the spring. And then over on our W and Avery well, we just issued a notice to proceed for installing new foundations for 4 GAC filters over at that well.
When those projects are done, will that mean that everywhere we detected PFAS, we will have filtration in place to solve for that? That's how I remember us talking about this in the past, but you tell me, is that going to bring us to that point, or are we already at that point?
No, we're not quite there. We have 28 wells altogether. Before the rule even came down from the federal government that set new PFAS limit goals that are to be established 5 years from roughly 5 years from today, we already had 15 of our wells with GAC on them. ECUA has been very proactive about that. We saw that coming down the pike.
Yeah.
So we've been working on that for many years.
To your credit, yes.
So here's another 3 that'll be done pretty soon. By the way, the Alvin McCorby well actually is replacing another well that already has GAC on it.
Oh, okay.
And so we try to do 1 or 2 a year, and we'll be done in advance of that 5 year.
You make me think of a question that I think I've wanted to ask for a long time, but maybe I didn't ask. You say it's a surface tank for storage of the water. That's the norm these days, right? You don't typically build water tanks up in the air like we're used to seeing. Like, of course, exist all around. Like the beach ball used to be, but is decommissioned, and the Blue Angels one down, I-110 is, of course, that's still functional. But is there a reason? What is the reason for not building them up in the air anymore? Or am I wrong that they don't?
It really varies depending on locations and topography and various other factors. Probably more communities are going toward ground storage just for the aesthetics of not having something up in the air. But there's reliability issues. When you build them on the ground, of course, you can build a much larger ones on the ground.
Sure.
You have anywhere from 500,000 to 1,000,000. They will build some at 2 or 3. The largest one that we've ever heard of being built in the air is 5 million gallons, and that is really a monstrosity of it.
Okay.
The tank to be putting up in the air. Most of the ones on the ground you'll see, however, will generally be anywhere from 3 to 6 million.
Okay, so there's more capacity. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And you don't have the maintenance cost of repainting them and spraying. That's, for instance, the tank that has all the logos on it by I-110. We spent $1.1 million painting that. Just a few years ago.
Yep, and I love the fact that you guys pivoted on that and created all the art that is so iconic. I really appreciate that. I know that was a bit of a conversation. Last thing, I think you guys also you mentioned it that you're working on line inspection and line service replacement. Is that right?
Yes, we have 115,000 water service lines in our system. We're going to be spending $1.6 million. Next year, replacing service lines, we try to be proactive and do whole neighborhoods at a time so that we don't have a series of problems in neighborhoods as we realize that they're getting to the end of the service life. We're going to be replacing close to 1,000 of those next year in the following neighborhoods: Myrtle Grove West, 261, Pine Lakes West, about 85 services, Robbins Ridge, phase 1 and 2, about 197 services, Corriedale Subdivision, 219 services. Along our drive, we've got 46 services, and then in Lost Creek Subdivision, 126 services.
Outstanding. Well, Bruce, it is always a lot of stuff that you guys are working on, and it's such an important part of our lives that nobody thinks about it until it's not working right. But garbage collection, recyclable collection, all of your yard waste, your getting of your water, your getting rid of your sewer, all of that stuff, you guys take such good care of it. I appreciate it. Bruce Woody, he is the executive director at ECUA. We'll talk to you again next month, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. Always appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. 6:54 here on News Radio 92.3. If you are thinking about buying or selling a home, you want a good realtor. You want somebody who's going to get you all the way through to closing. And, you might think, well, of course, once you get a realtor, you're going to sell the house. Well, I mean, I wish it were that way. We all wish it were that way. But, you know, who you choose for professional services can make a big difference. And, you know, a couple of years ago, almost everybody was selling almost everything they listed because it was an easy market. It was a very hot market. Then things cooled down a little bit and they have become what they are today, which means that you've got to really know your stuff and you got to solve problems. You got to work with people. You got to navigate around objections and, you know, you got to know what you can and can't do and what you must and must don't have to say yes to, all that kind of stuff, and how to set a price and how to do an open house and whatever. I was talking to Christina Leavenworth the other day, and you know they sell about three to four homes a week on average. So they do this a lot of experience. And she was telling me that one of the things they're encountering now is that people come to them after they've already tried another realtor or two or three or, I kid you not, five. I can't even imagine the stress and anxiety and disappointment and the emotional roller coaster of going through five realtors before you call Christina Leavenworth and they sell the house. You know, like... Well, you know, maybe make that your first call instead of your fifth call or your sixth call. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leaven Rinke Realty. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. Still dealing with the accident on 98 eastbound and, let's see, Pritchard Point Drive over in Navarre. And traffic is backed up almost to the Navarre Beach Bridge. So just be aware of that. You might want to plan an alternate route. It's about a 10 to 15 minute delay just because traffic is just starting to move. I-10, I-110, everything else is looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
It's time for Pensacola's favorite fall tradition, the Great Gulf Coast Arts Festival, happening November 7th, 8th, and 9th in historic Seville Square. Stroll through almost 200 artist booths, enjoy live music, grab a bite from local food vendors, and don't miss the Children's Festival with hands-on fun for all ages. Special thanks to Gulf Winds, Pods, Gulfside Landscaping, and WEAR. The Great Gulf Coast Arts Festival. 3 days of art, music, food, and family. Free admission. Details at ggaf.org.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Florida State and Wake Forest will square off in an ACC college football showdown Saturday night in Tallahassee on the Seminole Sports Network.
Injuries and penalties have been the biggest issues for the Seminole offense lately, as FSU is coming off a bye week, which means many of the players may have had a chance to recover. As FSU is welcoming Wake Forest into town on Saturday, pregame is at 4:30 on News Radio 92.3, home of FSU football.
Daniel will not stop crying. I've changed him, fed him, walked him around, and he's still crying. Now I'm panicking. What should I do?
It's okay. We're glad you called. We learned during the Period of Purple Crying program that babies tend to cry a lot in the first few months of life.
If nothing is working and you need a break, put the baby in a safe place and take a few minutes to walk away and calm down.
During the Period of Purple Crying, it is crucial to stay calm and never shake a baby. To learn more, visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the State of Florida, Department of Health, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Memories were meant to fade, Lenny. They're designed that way for a reason.
Oh man, that is from a really great sort of lesser known sci-fi movie called Strange Days about VR and the future, made in the 90s and looking forward to, like, you know, 2000. And boy, we overshot and undershot also at the same time. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, after tearing across Jamaica, Hurricane Melissa's path brought the storm into Cuba. Overnight, it weakened to a Category 3 before landfall there. A newly discovered Dr. Seuss manuscript is set to be released next year. The manuscript features the Cat in the Hat and Sing the 50 United States. That'll be published by Random House Children's Books next June, just in time for America's 250th anniversary. The manuscript was found earlier this year in archive materials at the Giselle Library at the University of California, San Diego. Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
That's great, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead.
The Blue Jays beat the Dodgers in Game 4 of the World Series last night. Now 2 games apiece. Game 5 happens tonight in L.A.
Yeah, good to see the series tied up 2-2. That's great. I had not seen that we got new works, a new piece coming out from, of course, now deceased Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel. So, or Geisel. So anyway, that's fantastic.